Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Thanks for joining me. Nate Geary here for the next, we'll call it 2 hours and some change as the NHL gets back to action, which you could hear right here, of course, on WGR following Sports Talk Saturday. We're going to head to the Wester Hotline now because on the line is Radio.com Sports Insider Mark Herzlich. Insider Call is brought to you by Pennzoil Motor Oils, made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. First and foremost, Mark, thanks for being so generous with your time and joining us here on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No, my pleasure. Big fan of yours since your college days in football. I was a Notre Dame fan, just full of disclosure, so I don't want this conversation to start off on a bad foot, but I just did wanted to make sure that was disclosed to start our conversation. So,
yeah, well, welcome to the ACC.
That's right. Welcome to the ACC is right. That's a good place to start. Obviously, I wanted to talk a lot of college football with you. You know, Mark, I know your head's probably not in the sand with everything going on in the sports world right now. Major League Baseball seemingly, with the train cars looking like they might be heading and veering off the tracks here. College football is very unique in that it's much different than what we're going to see in the NFL because the NFL doesn't have 50 or 60,000 students, potentially more, scheduled to head to campuses fairly shortly here. What do you expect? And let's just maybe look at this from a holistic 30,000-foot approach before we really get into the details of everything. You know, how do you view what college football is going to look like in a few weeks here as camps start getting underway and games start going? Obviously, this is going to be dramatically different from anything we've ever seen, but do you get the sense that it might even be more dramatically different than we're even maybe preparing ourselves for?
Yeah, well, I think that there's going to be a really difficult time having anyone in the stands. So that's what makes college football, I think, so great, is the students in the stands. Now, I think one of the things that we're going to have to watch for is how isolated are they going to keep the football players from the rest of the general population of the students? Because, as you just said, you're going to have thousands of students return to kind of a melting pot campus where spread of this coronavirus is going to be rampant. Every single time you get a bunch of people together, it seems like the, you know, infection rate goes up. So I am very encouraged by the fact that football is going to start. I just am nervous about how long it's going to last. I could easily see, as you kind of alluded to, something happening like baseball where you get the season started, but then as the season goes on, it might need to be derailed. It might need to look a little different than it is, and it might not finish.
So, Mark, being a former college football player, Division I player yourself, I've got to kind of ask you this question and maybe place you back like on a college campus, and let's think of this maybe your last year before the NFL draft. If you were a college athlete right now, let's put you in the shoes of Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Travis Etienne. Let's put you in the shoes of one of those three players. Why are you playing right now? Like, why would you right now, if you're one of those guys, go out and play the season other than you just have to absolutely love the game enough and your teammates that you simply couldn't accept yourself letting down the, you know, 100 guys that you have on that sideline, especially when you're as important as one of those guys?
Well, I think that, first of all, you put yourself back in college football players' shoes, meaning that you you don't have any idea what, like, being drafted, the money that you get from that, the future, what that feels like or can look like, and all you know is what you've known so far, right? So I guess I'm saying that because you do want to play football. Like, to them, all they've known their entire life is playing football religiously every single fall. So they would just be doing the thing that they normally do. And I think because, you know, I know that I came back for my senior year after, you know, potentially leaving after my junior year for the draft. I wanted to finish what I started. There's always this mentality and kind of, you know, coaches hammer at home and parents hammer at home since you're little. You know, finish what you started. Don't quit. And that's really at the epitome and in the center of athletics. And so there's, I believe that if they do play, that would be part of the mindset that they have. And quite honestly, I think that, you know, Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, they might have a easier time of staying healthy, but Travis Etienne at running back, I mean, you really got to be careful because you don't want to get hurt. And you, even if you don't play this year, you probably still will be the number one running back taken in the draft. So these guys all have to weigh those options. And if I was giving them recommendations, and this is just purely from a let's pay attention to your future, I would say do not risk it, do not play, and prepare yourself in quarantine for your next season. And that is not something that I want as a fan, obviously, but they have to be smart with their future.
We've got former Boston College linebacker Mark Herzlick here on the Wester Hotline. It's brought to you by Pennzoil. Motor oils made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Mark, the kind of build off that question, right? I do wonder how, because I know the reaction, and listen, Twitter is a vacuum. It's not necessarily the thoughts of the real world. It is a very special place, and I get that. So I'm not going to take it as, you know, religious. But what I will say is the feedback a lot of NFL players have been getting, the guys that are opting out, and I know here in Buffalo, Star Lotulelei, the defensive tackle, their starting guy, one of their highest paid players, he has decided to opt out for the 2020 season. And there were certainly a lot of, like, kind of back and forth from a positive and negative perspective saying, you know, hey, we wish we could, you know, punt on our job. We don't have that luxury as a normal, you know, 9-to-5, whatever. And, you know, I wonder if, you know, like, who's looking out exactly for college athletes? And I know the easy question, well, the NCAA is looking out for college athletes, but are they really? Like, you know, I think it, just like in Major League Baseball, the owners have put themselves in a position where they have to get these guys out in the field to play because they can't afford to lose the money. I think college football and the NCAA is almost in a very similar spot. The problem is they're exploiting the talents of players who aren't going to be paid. So, like, where does the balance come in on all that?
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, there have been talks, you know, a few years back on creating a union of sorts for college football players, and the only reason why there is any sort of, you know, I guess health benefits or job security or people looking is because there are unions, and there are unions in all those sports. So, to me, it has to be clear, right? It has to be their parents, kind of, which is a really hard thing for, you know, a parent or a player to have to advocate for themselves in that way, where it seemingly seems selfish, and it's not selfish. It's just, it's looking out for your own health and well-being.
Mark Herzlick here on the Wester Hotline. Mark, so, you know, with everything that we know about what's going to likely happen with college football, you talked about the ACC, Notre Dame, there has been, listen, you either love or you hate Notre Dame. There is not a middle ground. I've been a fan long enough to understand that. And, you know, there are a lot of traditionalists kind of upset, like, well, hey, now that Notre Dame actually needs a conference, okay, of course, like, the ACC is going to kind of let their guard down, bring Notre Dame in, open, you know, welcome with open arms. And being a longtime Notre Dame fan, I say, yeah, the ACC would be incredibly dumb to not welcome in Notre Dame, who is the only college football team with their own legitimate primetime cable news network that carries every single one of their games and dedicates time. So this is a great exposure opportunity for the ACC, right? Mark, do we got you? And it looks like we might have dropped off Mark Herzlich there from the Western Hotline. So Corey will do his best to work him back up. This is, I better get him back, too, because this is an interesting question. This was something I was really looking forward to asking him. The Notre Dame perspective. Of course, you know me. I've got to get some Notre Dame perspective in here. And a lot of the people that I am friends with give me slack, will give me pushback on being a Notre Dame fan, as most do. And one of the things that a lot of feedback I've been getting from them is, well, you know, why would the ACC let Notre Dame play? Because, you know, Notre Dame is blank. And why does Notre Dame get to be in division or conference now when they've, you know, consistently said they don't want to be? Listen, at the end of the day, we're just in unprecedented times. And if the ACC, there's just no way the ACC could say no to Notre Dame. Right, like they're not in a position to say no to a team with that type of exposure. And frankly, you know, the ACC in general is looking to be, I would say, slightly more competitive. Like you've got Clemson, you've got Virginia Tech, who's pretty good. And then like who? Like North Carolina's got a good quarterback, Sam Howell, great young player. He's going to be a first-round pick coming up here. But it's not like the ACC has a whole ton of options here, you know? So it's like at the end of the day, the ACC is in a difficult position because, A, you can't say no to Notre Dame. And Notre Dame, frankly, can't say no to the ACC. And we do have Mark Herzlich back who dropped off there. Mark, where I kind of left off there was the incorporation of Notre Dame into the ACC this year. And, you know, I got a lot of buddies who give me a lot of – like just give me a hard time for being a Notre Dame fan because, again, they're kind of like the Yankees. Of college football, like you're either a diehard or you're a diehard hater. There is really kind of no in between, and I do, you know, there wasn't really a world that the ACC could have like left Notre Dame out to dry, right?
No, well, I think that the only possibility would have been where they say, hey, you need, if you want to join in and play with the ACC this year, we need you to 100% sign on for the next 10 years. I mean, that could be a situation that did happen, but it didn't happen. And so I think it's a perfect fit. And hopefully, you know, I hope that they continue with the ACC going forward.
I think it's been a good relationship, frankly, for Notre Dame because, you know, at the end of the day, Notre Dame really kind of lives and dies by the rivalry games, right? And the Michigans of the world, the Michigan States and the Armies and the Navies, and even to a certain extent over the last decade or so, Syracuse and Boston College, right? Like these are sort of historic matchups for Notre Dame. You don't get the sense, though, that like if you're a real traditionalist of college football, that it sort of ruins anything, right? Like I don't really sit in that camp. I'm almost welcoming more of a yearly sort of subscription, essentially, to the ACC with the ability to play 6 to 7 games, get to play the Clemsons and the North Carolinas and the, you know, some of the Virginia Techs, which I think is always a good Notre Dame. Virginia Tech is always kind of a good matchup. Like it's probably good for both parties, right?
Yeah, I think it is. And for Notre Dame, really, even, you know, especially last year after Notre Dame joined ACC and the other sports, they had, you know, basically agreement saying we're going to play a bunch of games versus ACC opponents. You saw that last year. And so I think that the ability to, there's no coastal in the Atlantic right now. So whoever has the
Yeah, I think we got some technical difficulties on Mark. It's either on our end or Mark's end, so we apologize for that. Sorry to Mark for getting cut off there, but we'll let Mark go on that one. That's a tough situation back and forth there. So Corey, maybe give him a shout, let him know we're okay. We appreciate Mark and him joining us for at least a little bit of college football talk before the old winds of technology take us out. So one of the things, interestingly enough, that I kind of wanted to have an interesting conversation about today, and I can open the phones to you now, 803-0551, 888-552-550. The big names, the marquee names of college football, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Field, Travis Etienne, Sam Howell, right, quarterback in North Carolina. Some of these other names, I do think, there is a really interesting level of, like, what do you do if you're one of those guys? You know, what do you do if you're Trevor Lawrence right now? What do you have to gain if you're Trevor Lawrence? Like, like, you don't have much. Like, you don't, in fact, you have literally nothing to gain. Because if you're Trevor Lawrence, you're likely going to be the number one overall pick. And if you're not, you're going to be the number two overall pick. And the difference in money is not enough for you to be like, well, if I'm the difference between number one and number two pick, like, I'm going back to school, I better play. They just, you know, to Mark's point, Mark made a point about, you know, college football really looking back and wanting to at some point create a union, a players union, a players association of sorts, right? Which I think is grossly needed in college football. I mean, these are guys, these are men that are being exploited for their athletic ability, and more than 80% of them will never play an NFL snap. So how does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. I'll answer the question for myself. It does not make sense. So I sit in this bubble of opinion, right? Because that's what I do. I just talk about opinions. I have nothing at stake whether or not Trevor Lawrence plays football or doesn't play football. But I've got to wonder, like, if you are Trevor Lawrence and, like, you're just going to play and you're not even really contemplating sitting out, like why? If you are looking at this season as an opportunity to blank, like, if you're Trevor Lawrence, I'm looking into the 2020 season to win another national championship, win a Heisman Trophy. Okay, those are, I'd say those are fair things. Like, if you're Trevor Lawrence, you probably want to win a Heisman Trophy. That's fair. Is it worth it? Justin Fields. Like, these are all players that I think you get to a point in your life as just a fan, and you say, man, these kids are 22 years old, 21 years old, some of them 20, 19. How can you make a good decision about your future when there's so much pressure on you to perform for an organization, a school, a conference that isn't giving you anything other than the platform? Trevor Lawrence is going to have opportunities. Justin Fields, Travis Etienne, Sam Howell III. I mean, these guys are going to have opportunities that 90% of their teammates won't have. So maybe there is this level of, like, responsibility you might feel for the guys on your roster, right? Maybe you look at it as, I can't let down a bunch of guys who are never going to have this opportunity. Like, I could get there, but I think that's a lot of responsibility. I think it's a lot of BS, frankly. Like, I think that's a lot of guilt. That's the word I'm looking for. It seems like a lot of guilt on the side and the hands of players that don't necessarily deserve to have that guilt. Like, if you're an NFL player, or you're an NCAA college Division I player right now, and my God, if you're making a decision based on, well, I'm going to feel guilty if I don't go out there and play for my... Like, man, that is such a tough place to be in, because what the heck do you have to feel guilty for? You put your body on the line, you don't get paid, you make your school millions of dollars, your head coach gets paid millions of dollars for him to... And by the way, Dabo Swinney, right? The coach that is the highest paid coach in college football right now, or second paid... He's against his players getting paid. Of course he is. He's getting paid millions of dollars. What does he care if his players get paid? So, I don't know. It's just such a tough situation to be in if you're in college football at this point, because I don't think you can win, frankly. And even if you could, what is winning right now? Because you're likely not going to have a college football playoff. You're likely not, I mean, are conference championships going to happen? I don't know if it's a given at this point. How much of the season gets played? Nobody knows. So with so much uncertainty, I should say, it almost behooves these college football players to say, as much as I'd love to do this, this is a matter of safety for myself. This is a decision about my future. And, like, how could you fault someone who's trying to make a decision on their future? I think that would be... On our behalves, I think trying to be as understanding as possible of what these college athletes are going through is really important. And maybe most importantly, the things that we should start to understand about college athletics in a nutshell is that for the most part, these players are vastly, vastly underappreciated by their schools, by their fans, and maybe a college football strike is sort of what is needed for college football. Like, we're making movement here. Like, we are. Like, college football, these players are likely in a position that they're going to be able to get paid for their likeness. But again, that accounts for like 10% of college athletes. That's who it's going to matter for. The, you know, backup nose tackle, you know, your kicker, those guys aren't going to be ones that are benefiting from this likeness, from being able to make money off of your brand, so to speak. So, I don't know. We're just in such a weird place, and I sit in a place that I don't really want to look at college athletes and expect them to play football because blank. Like, why? That was kind of my question to Mark. It's like, if you're Trevor Lawrence, why would you play college football? What do you have to prove? Like, nothing. You have nothing to prove at this point. You're going to be the number one pick. You're going to be a Heisman finalist almost regardless. You could have a bad season. You're going to be in the room. I don't know. I feel for these college athletes. I do, because they're just in a no-win situation. They're damned if they play, because if they play, let's say Trevor Lawrence gets coronavirus. I'm going to tell you this. I mean, you know, my girlfriend had COVID. She's still having residual effects. Breathing, heart problems. Like, these are issues that are extending over 100 days. Like, there's a pitcher for the Boston Red Sox right now who got COVID and was a Cy Young candidate last year, who doesn't have a timestamp of when he'll potentially return because he doesn't know. He's having long-term ramifications from acquiring COVID. So what if Travis Etienne what if he develops an asthma symptom, a long-term asthma because of COVID that ruins his potential, that ruins his ability to be a top-end professional athlete? Is it worth it then? I mean, Travis Etienne going back in the first place. So, I don't know. I sit in a weird place with college athletes. They have almost nothing to win, so why play? You know, they're just, if you're a college athlete, I don't see any reason to play. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Pat in Buffalo. Pat, you're on Sports Talk Saturday. Thanks for joining me, Pat. Thanks for listening as well.
The point I was trying to make with the other guy, they're getting a free education. And then they're going to go into the NFL, hopefully, if they're good enough, and they're going to make millions of dollars. So I don't know. I don't understand your point.
I would say my point, Pat, is that, yes, they are getting a free education. How much is that free education worth right now during COVID?
Well, this is a special time. You can't go.
No, I agree. I agree it's a special time, but, you know, Cornell.
Everything's going to go back to whatever's normal is going to be.
Harvard and Yale, you know, some of the most expensive schools in the country are going to be going to an alternative learning, yet guys are going to be expected to pay the same price. So how much is a college education worth to a lot of these guys? By the way, probably less than 1% of college football players right now will go on to make millions of dollars in the NFL. On top of that, again, like, yeah, they're getting a free education, Pat, but that's worth going out and potentially risking your actual life as a potential pro athlete, risking your life and having long-term lung problems because you had to go out and play college football? I don't know. The education point to me is sort of antiquated. I'm sorry. I was thinking inundated. It's sort of antiquated. It's not really, to me, because you get a free education, that's worth you going out and risking your life, risking your well-being as an adult.
In theory, the kids still have to do the work of the education too.
Yeah.
Like, what you get is a free opportunity to go to the college, but the education isn't free. Those students have to work for that. And a lot of them work really hard for it, depending, you know, if you watch college football on TV, every game you'll see, like, there's going to be like a biology or a physics major or something like that, and you'll be sitting on your couch going, are you kidding me? You're doing that and trying to play football at the same time. Are you out of your mind? But also, they make these colleges hundreds of millions of dollars. So yes, a free education is great. Also, they should get a cut of the giant pile of gross, obscene money that these institutions make off of them playing the sport. There's nothing amateur about college athletics. It's a gigantic money-making machine. It's why they want to play the game. They don't want to play college sports this year.
Because it's best for the athletes.
Right.
That's not why they're playing.
That is not why they're doing this. They're doing this to make money. Money those guys never see. That's why they should get paid.
Yeah, and, you know, I get it. You know what NFL players get, too? They get paid, but they get free stuff, right? Like, the argument that they get a free education, so they should just, like, they're good. They don't have to. Why should they get paid? They're getting a free education.
I shouldn't get paid for working at the factory because I get a free education learning how to work a CNC machine. No.
Yeah.
Pay me for the work I do.
Right. Like, oh, I can't pay you, but I can give you, you know, 3 free months in a Motel 6. Does that count as payment?
No. Stop being suckers, people.
Yes.
Stop it. Stop defending billionaires.
Yes.
Knock it off.
Stop defending the NCAA for very clearly putting student athletes who have nothing to benefit going out there so that Tuscaloosa's economy can...
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Remain piping hot from billions of dollars of income and revenue generated by the football team there. Like, give me a break. That economy, those businesses get to stay open because of exploitation of youth athletes, like young players. So, again, there is nothing to gain from college football players going out there. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Thanks for the call, Pat. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Anyone else got any opinions on college football? We'll definitely talk about that next. Bruce Nolan of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast up at Buffalo Rumblings joins us next. We're going to talk a little bit of Josh Allen. Bingo! That's the buzzword. Josh Allen coming up next here on WGR. I feel like this is very appropriate music for our next guest.
It sounds NFL filmsy, doesn't it?
It sounds NFL filmsy, sounds a little like a cartoon vampire show introduction. like we're watching like a spin-off of cartoon Addams Family. So I think this is literally perfect for our next guest who joins us now on the Western Hotline, Bruce Nolan, of the Bruce, it's the Bruce Exclusive Podcast now on the Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network. You can check him out on Twitter at Bruce Exclusive. So, Bruce, I brought you on because you were going to tell us how Josh Allen's the best quarterback who's ever lived. He can throw the pigskin, actually comes off of the football when he releases it from his hands, and he is the most handsome man in all of America. That is your words, not mine.
My notes are way wrong, Nate. I don't know what to do with my hands now. I was not prepared for this, Nate.
We'll actually talk about what some of your takes were, because if you missed it this week, Bruce came out with one of his podcasts kind of talking about this idea that everyone does kind of lump Josh Allen and Mitchell Trubisky together because both are players who had good second seasons. Mitchell Trubisky went into his third season and puked all over himself and then got essentially replaced. And a lot of people are pointing to Josh Allen as like, okay, he had a good second year, better than we thought, but like he's in for a year three regression, even though he's got like, you know, an accessories of just an assemblyment of pretty solid talent across the board. Maybe the best talent around a quarterback that this team has seen maybe a decade, maybe longer, 2 decades. So I want to start by making sure people understand where your thought process was for this podcast. You wanted to do your due diligence on what and who is Mitch Trubisky and why he shouldn't really be compared to what Josh Allen is. And I think a lot of people took that a different way and ran with their own sort of narrative on that, thinking, well, Mitchell Trubisky was actually really, really good. He was better passer than Josh Allen. And then you kind of showed this video that I think was really maybe the best in sort of like way to represent what Mitch Trubisky was, and it was that third down. He can get a first down, and instead of running forward past the sticks, he runs to the sideline and gets tackled, and they end up, like, you know, not scoring on the play. And I think that really probably is a microcosm of what Mitchell Trubisky's young career has been. It's been kind of disappointing, you wanting to see more. Where do you stand on how Josh Allen and him are compared as much as they are, and why they probably shouldn't be any longer?
I know why they did it. Why they did it was because we have seen some examples in recent NFL history of young quarterbacks who have had an opportunity to be temporarily buoyed by their organizations by injecting a lot of talent onto the offensive side of the board with free agents, having a good defense, making the playoffs, even maybe potentially making a run, and then regressing as the necessity comes for the quarterback to start carrying more and more of the load. I get it. And by that measure, you might look at Josh Allen and say, okay, maybe he's next. If you're part of the national media, you see a potential regression coming. But this idea that there's an equitable skill set between Josh Allen and Mitch Trubisky is just, it literally drives me bonkers. And so because the narrative is so strong and because it's so inaccurate, in my opinion, I felt the need to devote an entire pod series to just why Josh Allen isn't Mitchell Trubisky, and as a side note, why he's not Blake Bortles either. Mitchell Trubisky, you know, was a four-star recruit coming out of high school, Mr. Ohio football from Mentor, Ohio, on the east side of Cleveland. He came down to UNC. He wasn't able to beat out Marquise Williams in the ACC program that he was at. Marquise Williams ended up going on to be an undrafted free agent in the NFL. When Mitchell Trubisky starts and plays well, he plays well in a very manufactured offense with binary reads. He gets compared to Alex Smith a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's where the questions should start to pop in. When on earth has anyone in their right mind ever compared Josh Allen to Alex Smith? Never. That's never happened. But Mitchell Trubisky has proven, and he proved it again in Chicago, that within the confines of a manufactured offense, if you make things easy for him, if you do binary reads, if you incorporate a lot of RPO, if you put in read option, if you create high lows in the passing game, if you make things easy on him, he can perform well. And so I think that comparison to Alex Smith is actually starting to kind of manifest itself. That's not even close to being the book on Josh Allen. Mitchell Trubisky struggled in college. He struggled in the NFL when he was forced to make secondary and tertiary reads and drive the ball to the intermediate parts of the field. I don't know if you know this or not. That's kind of one of the things that Josh Allen does well. And so the comparison is just flabbergasting. The scouting reports aren't similar. The situations aren't similar. The offenses aren't similar. The only thing that is similar is this idea that you think Josh Allen is set up for a backslide based on the fact that you've seen other people make a backslide in similar team compositions. That's it. And that's really lazy. And I get kind of tired of it. Felt like I wanted to comment on it.
No, and I think it's a very interesting conversation to have because it's important to note, like, none of us, and I know you aren't, and I know, and you got to know that I'm not. We are not like Josh Allen bootlickers here. We're not the type of people that are, he is the best, shut your mouth. You are discredited as being even remarkably, like, you have no, there's zero respect in the football community because you can't admit that Josh Allen's good type of people. We are very much, we almost have to sort of, we're wait and see people. Like, I will wait and I will have a reaction on Josh Allen every week. And that reaction and that thought about Josh Allen may change every week. And that's fine because he's the type of quarterback that you almost have to approach that way. There is really no other way to approach Josh Allen other than a day-by-day, day-in-and-day-out type of thing. And to your point about their histories in high school, like, these are two players that came from remarkably different universes. Like, these are players that aren't even in the same species when we're talking about high school athletes. And I think it's important to note that. It's important to make a mark of that. Not only that, but both of them didn't have, like, super long and maybe most important, super successful college campaigns. Like, neither of them were very particularly good in college.
And that's the different thing. It's like, it's experience is not just how many games you played. It's how many games you played multiplied by the type of competition you played by them. And so with Josh Allen, he played way more games than Mitchell Trubisky, but his stat line wasn't nearly as good. Mitchell Trubisky played way less, and so that's not even comparable. Yes, their college careers both came out with question marks, but for completely different reasons. No one's saying that Josh Allen is completely incapable of having a backslide year three the way Mitchell Trubisky did, the way Blake Bortles did the year before. No one's saying that's not possible. What I'm saying is if it happens, it won't be because he's Mitch Trubisky. It'll be for a completely different reason due to a completely different path. Qualitatively, they aren't even close to being similar players. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to plant my flag at Josh Allen's the greatest thing that's ever happened, and I'm going to defend it against anyone who dares question me. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. What I'm saying is it's a lazy take. And so when you have a lazy take, you kind of have to address it.
We got Bruce Nolan here on the Western Hotline. Bruce, it is a very, to me, he's obviously polarizing. And I don't think there's an A or B or C answer. I think there's combinations of all three when you have to sort of look at Josh Allen. And you can't do it from within a vacuum because that leaves yourself open to criticism because you're going to miss things when you're talking about Josh Allen. And I think that's the one nuanced point that doesn't get talked about enough is, you know, for me, and God bless his soul, you know, like he's my colleague. I love Joe. Me and him have a lot of good back and forth about this topic. But the idea that, you know, Josh Allen and, like, say, Tyrod Taylor are somehow, I would say, somehow in a very similar place throwing the football. And if you want to say they're equal running the football, that's really where I've got to pause and stop you. Because as much as all of us want Josh Allen to be a better and more consistent passer, why is it, and maybe this is just because Lamar Jackson's efficiency passing numbers are just so bonkers and galaxy brain, like you can't really wrap your head around how efficient he was last year as a deep ball and just an overall efficient passer, that you maybe start to look Josh Allen with more jaded eyes because you're like, listen, if Lamar Jackson can be nearly as effective as a runner, but maybe twice as effective and efficient as a passer, that's really where you have to start judging harshly of Josh Allen. But, like, how come, you know, other guys get credit for their elite running ability, and that's at least accounted for? Tyrod was a good runner. Like, there's zero comparison that Josh Allen is a significantly more effective runner of the football within the red zone, within the 50, with from the 20s in the 20s. Like, this is one of the best running quarterbacks in football, but that conversation gets completely lost. It almost becomes irrelevant to his naysayers, and it is confusing to me.
It's because we like to use rushing yards. That's why. We like to tack on rushing yards and use that as effectiveness in running the ball. And that's actually, I would make an argument for a quarterback, rushing yards running the football is one of the least effective ways of measuring how effective they are as a running back. Because when you have a quarterback and they run the football, are they really always trying to gain as many yards as humanly possible, or are they trying to get to the next thing? I think rushing success rate, EPA per rush, are probably far more effective when you talk about quarterbacks than just rushing yards. It's about getting that third and four, getting 5 yards on third and four. It's about converting the third and one. It's about converting the fourth and one. It's about getting the goal line carry. It's about getting to the next thing. Rushing as a quarterback is a valuable tool because it helps you deal with the ups and downs that come along with passing plays. The fact of the matter is it's not always going to be perfect. Let's just get to the next thing. Let's get the first down. Let's reset and let's move on. And so when you only look at rushing yards, that's it, just rushing yards. Okay, well, if I scramble for 10 yards on 3rd and 13, is that really valuable? Is that super valuable? Okay, now I get another 10 yards of field position that helps my special teams. Great. But that's not the correct measure of rushing effectiveness for a quarterback. And the problem is we've got all these advanced passing statistics, and we're getting more comfortable with them. But then when it comes to quarterback rushing, we just equate right to rushing yards, and that's it. We stop there and go, look at the same amount of rushing yards. And that's why you think that Josh Allen and Mitchell Trubisky are similar runners. And they're not.
They are, I mean, as runners, you can't even really compare the two. And I think the better comparison that doesn't get compared enough, Bruce, is Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. They are the two. There is no, I don't think there's a third guy that's close right now. Kyler Murray's the third guy. Okay, I'll give Kyler Murray that. But he is still not quite the same effectiveness. Like, when you're in the red zone, there are two players in the NFL that are maybe the top two red zone targets in football happen to be quarterbacks, and they happen to be players that can make throws in the red zone that other guys can't make. Josh Allen maybe most notably there is there are throws with inside the 20 that almost no other quarterback in football can make than Josh Allen. So therefore, if I look at Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and say they are the top two red zone weapons in football, but they aren't even talked about nearly as close in the same conversation, that indicates to me that there are aspects of Josh Allen's game that can take a step forward that I think through osmosis, through everything else improving for Josh Allen, that they almost have to improve, right? Like, his accuracy numbers this year, like, almost have to improve, no? Like almost through process of elimination, they have to, not even because he's going to get better, but just because the people around him, learning more, wanting to check the ball down more than 1% of the time. Like, these are things that I think, just through osmosis, he's going to be more accurate in the future, and he might have 5 points better in accuracy metrics next year and still be the same quarterback, right?
Absolutely, because some of the contextual metrics that lead to completion percentage, things like average distance of target, drop rate, check down rate, some of those things, we always talk about regression to the mean, and we talk about it a lot with Josh Allen at predicting a regression, and we talk about it with Mitch Trubisky and, oh, he should have seen his regression. Blake Bortles should have seen his regression. What about progression to the mean? There is such a thing as positive regression to the mean. You cannot have the number one drop rate in the NFL forever. That's not going to happen just based on randomness. You're not going to have the highest average distance of target. You're not going to be that high forever. Right? At some point, it's going to come down. You're not always going to have a 1% checkdown rate. As you grow, those things naturally start to come out of you. Now, I know Josh Allen's never going to have the lowest average distance of target. We're never going to turn him into Derek Carr, Super Trent Edwards. We're never going to do that. Instead, those things are going to progress or regress to the mean. So just as likely as Josh Allen taking a step back is this idea that those metrics that then provide context to his completion percentage will change. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, if you just look at Devin Singletary and Dawson Knox, if they hadn't dropped 14 out of 91 passes last year, Josh Allen would be almost a 62% completion percentage just from them. So, I'm not saying Josh Allen is the best and most accurate quarterback in the history of mankind, but this idea that he is laughably and comically bad and we can't hit the broadside of a barn is a conflation of all this national media people who don't take a second to look a little bit deeper. And that's where the Mitchell Trubisky take comes from. It comes from the idea that you don't want to go any deeper than that.
So, Bruce, before I let you go, this is going to be a unique season. And, you know, I think if you're a sports fan and you're watching Major League Baseball, you're probably, I say this to Sal earlier, like, you're biting your fingernails right now because you got to be terrified that the NFL is not necessarily following suit with Major League Baseball, but they're going to be spending time in other cities across the country. I look at Houston. I look at Arizona. I look at the three teams in Florida. I look at the team in Atlanta. And I look at some of these other states that are in the there are multiple California teams. Like, all of a sudden, you get to, like, more than half the league is in areas of the country that are having extreme outbreaks of COVID right now. And I start to worry myself of, like, you know, and maybe this is selfish of me, but this is definitely the best Bills team of my lifetime in terms of on-paper talent, the position that they're in the division. This is the kind of year that, like, would basically break me if the season were to get canceled. With that being said, I know you've done a lot of work. You've brought in a lot of epidemiologists. You've talked to people. You've done your research. Does it also, to you, or do you also feel the closer we get to games, the less likely it is feeling like that they're actually going to play them?
I'm not necessarily unconfident that they're going to play them. I do wonder if they're going to finish them. Because I think your ability to maintain some semblance of control over the situation greatly spirals out of control when you have team buses, team planes, hotels, traveling to other, you have airports. These are things that are outside of the variable. This is the reason why the NBA went to the bubble, is this idea that there are certain factors you can control. And when you start to drift outside that, you increase the variance. And when you increase variance with something that is contagious, then you increase your possibility of getting exponential problems. And so I have every confidence that they can start games. I don't necessarily have a ton of confidence that there's not going to be a significant, you know, rash of COVID cases due to factors that I don't know how you would expect the NFL to properly control them.
Yeah, man, it's a situation that certainly concerns me, and I know it concerns a lot of people. But at a certain point here, like, a lot of us are just kind of looking for clarity. We're looking for consistency. And I know Major League Baseball isn't bringing that. The NBA is. And I hope that, you know, that the National Football League looks at the situation the NBA is, the precedent that they're setting, and they try to follow suit in every way they can. And what I hope doesn't happen is that, you know, Roger Goodell in this situation. Listen, if Roger Goodell ends up looking like an incompetent idiot like Rod Manfred does of Major League Baseball, everybody loses. So I'm rooting for the NFL. I hope that they can figure out a way to do this, but do this safely. You know, none of us love football enough to watch long-term ramifications of our favorite players getting sick and having, you know, long-term effects from COVID, which we're starting to learn more and more about this virus. And I know you know this, Bruce, but like the more we learn about it, the more we learn that we know nothing about it. And that's to me the scary part of this.
I would agree with that. You know, it goes from just a binary, you know, did they die? You know, we
right.
get all the, you know,
are they dead or are they alive? And that's just not the way to look at this.
It's not that simple. It's not just are they dead or are they alive. It's about what type of long-term effects we're going to have. We're hearing about Major League pitchers who potentially have heart issues now that are connected potentially to COVID. And there's just not enough information. And how risky are you willing to be with a human life that is partially designed to make sure that they can do something for a living that you find entertaining? Like, how risky are you willing to be with someone else's life? Like, how risky are you willing to do just so you can feel like you're entertained? And that's a really uncomfortable question, uncomfortable comment, and it's kind of uncomfortable to think about. But unfortunately, we have to, because human life matters, and the quality of human life matters.
That's true. And again, it's not an easy, to your point, it's an awkward situation. It's an awkward conversation that you have to have yourself. And I always like to think of it like this, Bruce. If you had to explain to your younger daughter or your son or your wife who doesn't pay attention to sports why it's important to you that grown men, grown women sacrifice their long-term health so that you can be entertained, try explaining it to someone who doesn't watch sports and see how ridiculous you sound. I think that's a really good barometer. That's a good test for you to find out if you're being absolutely ridiculous about what sports are really truly mean during this time to you. Try it. I think it's a good test for everybody to take.
Listen, I love sports, but ultimately we are talking about grown men and grown women in costumes with a ball. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. We find it entertaining because we have a rooting interest. You know, people, you know, aliens come down from another planet, they look at sports and like, I don't understand what this is. So you're emotionally invested in this, right? Yeah, I'm emotionally invested in this. Because you like the colors that person's wearing. Yeah. Okay. That's the way that people who don't like sports feel like when we try to explain it to them.
Yeah, Bruce, I definitely didn't see us getting to the when aliens come down to Earth part of this segment. And I absolutely, these are the reasons I bring you on, because our segments take unexpected turns. So listen, my friend, I appreciate you making time for me as always. Keep up the top-notch content you're busting out over there at Buffalo Rumblings. We appreciate it. We'll be having you on again soon. And I look forward to a time where you can come back to Buffalo and we can enjoy chicken wings together. It's been too long.
Looking forward to it, Nate.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Bruce Nolan there of the Bruce Exclusive podcast on Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network. Going to take a quick time out. Going to do my thing again where I take another quick time out for that, because Pat Malacaro joins me. We're finally going to rip apart baseball. I know you've been waiting. I have been teasing it by ripping apart baseball anyways, but now I'm really going to do it. Coming up next with Pat Malacaro. All right, everybody, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. I went grossly over my allotted time for my last segment with Bruce Nolan, but it's easy to do when you're talking to an enlightened gentleman like that. Bryson DeChambeau, just a quick update, still a complete unit, still driving his three wood further than like two of my shots combined. That's happening. That was just a sports update. I saw it on my computer. Bryson DeChambeau, still a unit. Quick timeout. On the other side, Pat Malacaro, voice of the Bisons. He's also on Sabres pregame and intermission reports with Brian Koziel. So Pat's coming up next. We're going to talk about Major League Baseball. There is a lot to unpack, a lot of potential breaking news set to take place in the next 24 hours or so. So we'll get Pat's thoughts on Major League Baseball, what's next, and what we can expect. All that's coming up here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.